Hello, this is Wallace Kleindienst, volunteer reader for Sun Sounds of Arizona, and welcome to the Wednesday edition of Northland Views. We'll be reading today from the White Mountain Independent, as well as the Payson Roundup. And from the White Mountain Independent is the first story, breaking news, with the headline, Navajo County Deputies Return Infant to Mother. Navajo County Sheriff's deputies were able to locate and return an 11-day-year-old to its mother after locating the 11-day-old infant and its father on August 1st. Sheriff deputies received an attempt to locate report from the Surprise, Arizona Police Department around 5:33 in the morning for an infant that had been allegedly taken from its mother by its 21-year-old father in Surprise, Arizona. At 7:58 in the morning, sheriff deputies located a vehicle matching the description of the vehicle in the attempt to locate, traveling westbound on Interstate 40 near Winslow, and stopped the vehicle. The 21-year-old father was traveling with a 44-year-old man and a 45-year-old woman. The infant was found unharmed, safely strapped to an infant safety seat with a diaper bag nearby. Sheriff David Klaus said, "We are incredibly grateful that this infant was located safely and returned unharmed." He added, "The timely sharing of information, combined with the coordinated efforts of every agency involved, made it possible to quickly locate the vehicle and bring this incident to a safe resolution." The Navajo County Sheriff's Office was assisted by the Arizona Department of Public Safety, the Navajo County Major Crimes Apprehension Team, the Navajo County Criminal Interdiction Unit, and the Winslow Police Department. And the next headline from Sanders, Puerco Valley Fire District closes after months-long funding crisis. A story by Jen Mariah. The Puerco Valley Fire District closed its doors at noon on July 24th, leaving the Navajo Nation and neighboring agencies to cover fire and medical calls across a 2,500-square-mile service area that includes Sanders, Arizona, nearby Navajo communities, and a 52-mile stretch of Interstate 40. An urgent notice distributed through the Navajo Nation Office of the Speaker said district employees received layoff notices and no estimated reopening date was provided. The district reportedly notified emergency agencies in the Navajo Nation, Ganado, Holbrook, and St. John's before closing. The closure directly affects residents in and around Nahate de Zil, Wide Ruins, Hauk, and Say Siani, as well as areas outside Navajo Nation boundaries that relied on Puerco Valley or existing mutual aid agreements. The Navajo Nation Division of Public Safety said Navajo Nation Fire and Rescue and Navajo Nation Emergency Medical Service have activated emergency plans for affected communities within the nation. Fire calls are being coordinated through the Navajo Police Department and relayed to Navajo Nation Fire and Rescue. Navajo Nation EMS also activated its incident response team and began mobilizing personnel and equipment to the Navajo Police Department's Sanders substation. Until that deployment is fully established, EMS units from Fort Defiance, Ganado, and Chinle on the Navajo Nation are responding to medical calls in the affected area. Residents may face longer response times because responding units must travel greater distances. Outside Navajo Nation boundaries, coverage will depend on existing mutual aid agreements and the availability of neighboring agencies. As of July 29th, the Puerco Valley Fire District's website had not been updated to reflect the closure and continued to state that the department was on call 24/7 and ready to respond. A call by the White Mountain Independent to the district's listed telephone number produced only a sustained electronic tone similar to a fax signal. Board Chair Antonio Wood had not responded to an attempt to reach her by press time. The closure follows a financial crisis that the Independent newspaper has tracked since October 2025 and brings about the outcome district leaders and Navajo Nation representatives had repeatedly warned could occur. after an October 7th, 2025 executive session concerning the Puerco Valley and Ganado Fire Districts, Apache County supervisors directed the County Attorney's Office to work with the Arizona Auditor General to investigate both districts. Supervisors also directed the County Treasurer to stop redeeming district warrants unless sufficient money was available or other statutory requirements were met. Apache County later said Puerco Valley had exceeded its available property tax levy revenue by more than $3 million, leaving the district with a negative account balance that had existed since approximately 2021. The county said that the district's tax levy had reached the maximum allowed under Arizona law, and the incoming levy collections were being applied to reduce deficit. It also maintained that the county could not legally provide loans, advances, or supplemental funding. From Heber Overgaard is the headline, Navajo County announces discovery of unused 2024 general election ballots. During the July 21st, 2026 primary election, poll workers at the Heber Overgaard polling location discovered approximately 3,000 blank election ballots from the 2024 general election. The ballots were found in shrink-wrapped packages inside a storage tub in a closet at the county facility, which is used primarily as a Navajo County Sheriff's Office substation. The ballots remained unused and sealed in their shrink-wrapped packages. They contained no voter selections, were never cast, and were never tabulated. They therefore did not affect any votes, tabulated results, or the outcome of any contest in the 2024 general election. Although the ballots had no effect on the election results, their discovery revealed a failure in the procedures used to account for and return unused ballots. At the close of voting, poll workers are required to reconcile the number of ballots cast, damaged or spoiled, and unused with the total number of ballots issued to the precinct. Unused ballots must then be returned with other election materials to the tabulation center where the totals are verified. The signed reconciliation form from the Heber Overgaard polling location reported that all ballots issued to the precinct have been accounted for. The discovery of the unused ballots at the polling location establishes that the ballots were not returned as required and that the discrepancy was not identified during the post-election verification process. No votes or election results were affected because these ballots remained blanked, unused, and sealed, County Manager Brian Layton said. Nevertheless, he said, this was a serious procedural failure. We are investigating how it occurred, why the required safeguards did not identify it, and what changes are necessary to reduce the likelihood of anything similar happening again. Navajo County has secured the discovered ballots and is preserving the relevant records and materials. The county is conducting an administrative review of ballot inventory, chain of custody, reconciliation, and return procedures. The Navajo County Sheriff's Office has also been requested to assist in the administrative review of the circumstances surrounding the ballots' presence at the facility. And in other public safety news is the headline, DPS takes New Mexico drug trafficker into custody with the aid of Apache County Sheriff's Office and the Round Valley Police Department. Arizona Department of Public Safety troopers took a man wanted in connection with trafficking fentanyl and other drugs into custody after a pursuit near Eager on July 30th. According to the Catron County Sheriff's Office in New Mexico, the Catron County Sheriff's Office had been investigating Jason Toby for trafficking fentanyl in Catron County since he was arrested in March and was allegedly found in possession of 75 tablets of the drug fentanyl. Working with Arizona authorities, the Catron County Sheriff's Office was able to determine that Toby was allegedly bringing methamphetamine and fentanyl into Catron and Apache counties from the Phoenix area. Law enforcement was able to determine Toby's route to and from the valley. They were able to locate him on July 28th in Phoenix and alerted DPS to his movements. They tracked him to a home in the Eager area on July 30th. Toby allegedly fled the home in a vehicle and was taken out by DPS troopers before he could leave town. Law enforcement officers believe Toby may have been trying to flee back to Catron County. Catron County Sheriff's Office deputies were waiting for him at the state line. He was arrested on multiple charges, including evading with a motor vehicle, possession of methamphetamine, and possession of heroin. He also has multiple warrants out in Maricopa, Apache, Navajo, Yavapai, and Coconino counties. And in other public safety news from Gila County is a headline, full closure scheduled on U.S. Highway 60 between Superior and Miami, Arizona, beginning on August 6th and then through August 11th and the 13th. U.S. Highway 60 between Superior and Miami at milepost 227 to 243 will be closed to the public from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. on August 6th and then again on August 11th through the 13th to continue the bridge replacement project there. The detour is eastbound U.S. 60 drivers can use southbound State Route 177 through Winkelman to northbound State Route 77. Westbound U.S. drivers may use southbound State Route 77 through Winkelman to northbound State Route 177. Due to the roughly 75-mile length of this detour, drivers may want to consider planning travel before 9 a.m. in the morning and after 2 p.m. in the afternoon. The detour is estimated to add an additional hour for trips between Superior and Miami. Lane restrictions, speed reductions, and a 12-foot vehicle with restriction will be in place for the duration of the project. Oversized loads may be accommodated with advance notice. Drivers should allow extra travel time, use caution, be prepared to slow down, and merge safely when approaching and traveling through all work zones. You tuned in to Sun Sounds of Arizona, and you're listening to the Wednesday edition of Northland Views. And in the next headline, Rethinking Water in the White Mountains, a story by Tony Gibbons. As drought conditions persist and snowfall continues to fall below historical averages, questions about the White Mountains' long-term water supply are becoming harder to ignore. For local hydrogeologist Sarah Chudnoff, the answer does not begin with drilling deeper wells or searching for the next water source. It begins with a conversation. "We don't discuss this as a community," Chudnoff said in an interview. "Why do we believe that we're never going to run out of water?" It's a question that she has spent much of her time asking. Born in Tucson and raised in New Mexico by a father who was also a hydrologist, Chudnoff grew up watching communities across the West wrestle with water issues. As executive director of the American Groundwater Trust, her work takes her throughout the country, facilitating discussions about groundwater management, conservation, and long-term planning. She believes the White Mountains have reached a point where those conversations are becoming increasingly important. Over the past several years, local communities have continued to grow. New housing developments have been proposed, public infrastructure continues to expand, and wildfire preparedness has become an increasing priority. Even discussions surrounding Pinetop Lakeside's future fire station have highlighted the importance of maintaining adequate water supplies for emergency response. For Chudnoff, none of these projects are inherently problematic. The question, she says, is whether communities fully understand the resource that supports them. Many residents associate the region's water supply with winter snowfall. While snowpack remains important, Chudnoff said groundwater tells a much longer story. The White Mountains draw water from multiple aquifers, including the shallow Pinetop, sometimes referred to as the Malapai Aquifer, and the much deeper Coconino Aquifer. "We are mining that water," she says. "The idea that there is an infinite supply is wrong." Even several wet winters, she said, would not quickly recharge the deeper groundwater systems communities rely upon. Perhaps more surprising, Chudnov said, is scientists still do not fully understand how the area's groundwater systems interact. How prolific is the Coconino? What feeds Big Spring? We don't even know how the shallow and deep aquifers communicate, Chudnov said. Those unanswered questions, combined with declining spring flows from deeper aquifers, are among the reasons that she believes more groundwater monitoring is needed before future demands continue to increase. One of the biggest misconceptions Chudnov encounters is the belief that water itself is inexpensive. The water is free, she said. The well isn't. Communities, she said, pay for wells, pumps, storage tanks, treatment facilities, pipelines, distribution systems, meters, electricity, and ongoing maintenance. As groundwater levels decline, those costs can continue to rise. The days of cheap water are over, she said. So the question becomes, what can we do today? Rather than waiting until water becomes scarce enough to require significant rate increases or restrictions, Chudnov believes communities should begin discussing conversation now. As Arizona continues to attract new residents and businesses, Chudnov believes that communities should carefully evaluate developments that require substantial groundwater resources. At what point do you pause and think about how we're going to develop so we don't have to chase the next supply, she said. She also cautioned communities to consider the long-term costs associated with large industrial water users, including data centers. Don't drill the well for the short-term gain, Chudnov said. She believes communities should have an active voice in determining how local water resources are managed. She favors publicly owned water and wastewater systems because, in her view, they provide greater opportunities for transparency, conservation programs, and public participation than privately owned utilities do. If Pine Top and Lakeside had their own water and wastewater, they could set more things in place, she said, pointing to examples such as conservation rebates, reclaimed water systems, online education programs, fire suppression planning, and dedicated conservation staff. She also sees greater opportunities to expand the use of treated wastewater, commonly known as purple pipe water, for irrigation and other non-potable uses. We need to rethink all of our water streams, she says. While policy discussions often dominate water debates, Chudnov believes residents can collectively make a meaningful difference through everyday choices. She encouraged homeowners to evaluate whether ornamental lawns are worth the amount of water they consume, while embracing drought-tolerant landscaping, rain sensors, soil moisture sensors, and low-flow plumbing fixtures. There are smart fixtures and low-flow fixtures that add up at a community level, Chudnov said. At the same time, she recognizes that parks, schools, and other spaces serve a different purpose by providing shared recreational areas for families. If it's at a park or school, then it's a shared resource, Chudnov said. Further news about our water resource is a headline. Colorado River Plan could sharply cut Arizona supply as Apache County drought persists. A story by Jen Mariah. A federal framework released on July 31st could sharply reduce Arizona's Colorado River supply beginning in 2027 as drought continues to strain water supplies in Apache County and across the West. The framework governs the Colorado River rather than pumping from local aquifers, but it arrives as northeastern Arizona faces its own groundwater imbalance. Its effect could reach Apache County through tribal water planning, federal hydropower costs, and the wider economic consequences of a less dependable Colorado River. What would the federal plan do? The U.S. Bureau of Reclamation's final environmental impact statement creates a 10-year framework for operating Lake Powell and Lake Mead after the current rules expire at the end of this year. Rather than establishing one water cut formula through 2036, the framework sets boundaries within which federal officials can adjust releases from the river and storages as river flows, reservoir levels, and water use arrangements change. It allows domestic lower basin shortages of as much as 3 million acre feet a year. The Interior Department expects to adopt operating rules for roughly 2 years at a time. For each period, the Interior Secretary would seek agreement among the 7 Colorado River Basin states, of which Arizona is one, and tribes, but could set the rules if they cannot reach a consensus. The flexibility comes as the Colorado River Basin faces its lowest winter snowpack on record. Combined storages in Lakes Powell and Meade is at its lowest level since before Lake Powell began filling back in 1963. How those federal decisions reach Apache County depends largely on where the county's water comes from. Unlike the metropolitan areas served by the Central Arizona Project, Apache County depends overwhelmingly on groundwater. A 2024 county water profile from the U of A Water Resources Research Center says about 94% of water used in Apache County comes from groundwater and 6% from surface water. The Central Arizona Project Aqueduct physically delivers Colorado River water to Maricopa, Pinal, and Pima counties. It does not extend into Apache County. The federal review governs operations at Lake Powell, Lake Meade, and the Colorado River below Glen Canyon Dam, so it does not set pumping limits for local municipal or private wells or establishing operating rules for the Little Colorado or Lyman Lake. The local groundwater system is also more complex than one vast underground reservoir would be. Depending on location, wells draw from several water-bearing formations, including the Coconino and Navajo aquifers and shallower basalt and alluvial deposits. Recharge varies as well. Rain, snowmelt, and runoff replenishes some shallow aquifers, while deeper groundwater can take much longer to replace. Those differences matter beyond the Colorado River decision. Limited and uneven recharge has also brought groundwater into local land use debates. During discussions of major industrial proposals, including wind energy projects, residents have raised concerns about water needed during construction, dust control, possible contamination, and the cumulative demand placed on already stressed basins. Thus, the region's reliance on wells, does not mean it has plenty of water. A 2025 Arizona Department of Water Resources assessment found that demand in the Little Colorado River Plateau Basin exceeded available supply by nearly 81,800 acre feet in 2024. That basin covers parts of Apache, Coconino, and Navajo counties, and the report said its long-term imbalance has depleted groundwater storage. Recent monsoon rain has improved short-term drought conditions in northern Apache County from extreme to severe. It helps soil moisture, rangeland, and streams, and can contribute to local aquifer recharge, but it does not resolve the basin's long-term imbalance. The rain also will not refill Lakes Powell and Meade, which depend largely on high elevation snowmelt in the upper basin. We leave the White Mountain Independent and now turn to the Payson Roundup with the headline, Taylor Pool Proposals Still Under Wraps, a story by Peter Alshire. The Payson Town Council in the coming months will likely get a chance to decide what to do next when it comes to reopening the Taylor Pool. The town approved issuing a request for proposals in January. On July 1st, the town got multiple responses, but those responses have remained under wraps pending review despite a public records request. Payson Town Manager Darren Caldwell said a 5-person committee is reviewing the responses to the request for recommendations on design alternatives for the pool. This includes either reopening the 6-lane uncovered pool with remodeled locker rooms or adding 2 lanes so that it can host swim meets. The RFP asked for qualified and experienced aquatic facility contractors or design build teams to provide professional services for the rehabilitation, modernization, and potential expansion of the Taylor Pool and Bathhouse. The town has been debating the fate of Taylor Pool for more than 5 years, including paying consultants for multiple recommendations and cost estimates. The fate of Taylor Pool was a key issue in the July 21st town council election, in which Councilman Brett Flaherty defeated Mayor Steve Otto. Flaherty had previously supported a $70 million infrastructure bond that would have built a new swimming pool and community center financed by money from a one-cent increase in the sales tax. However, the bond issue collapsed in part because the cost of the swim center ballooned to some $40 million. Flaherty argued that if the town wasn't going to spend the $5.5 million per year from the sales tax on infrastructure, it should repeal the levy. Otto had criticized the council for seeking the bond issue and pushed to reopen Taylor Pool at the lowest possible cost. But the latest competing proposals to remodel Taylor Pool remained under wraps throughout the campaign. The town released the RFP, but not the documents, in response to a Roundup record request, saying the staff committee members had not yet completed their review of the proposals. Well, that wraps up the news from the White Mountains and Payson. And this wraps up another edition of the Wednesday Northland Views. I'll be back with you next week for the next edition of Northland Views. This is Wallace Kleindienst, volunteer reader for Sun Sounds of Arizona. Thank you so much for listening.